Hello, friends. I'm Marissa Blackwood, and welcome to All Things Murder. Welcome to All Things Murder, the show that dives into real true crime cases that inspired pop culture movies and shows we know today. I'm Marissa Blackwood, and I'm getting queasy just even thinking about this case, for this man truly enrages and disgusts me. Oh yes, friends, today we're going to be discussing Jeffrey Dahmer. Now, if you haven't heard, Evan Peters is now playing Jeffrey Dahmer and the new Netflix series Monster, the Jeffrey Dahmer story. Oh my god, and I pray that Evan Peters has a therapist on standby. Could not even imagine playing one of the most horrific serial killers throughout American history. So listener's discretion is advised. God, just watching the show, it's been a journey, is what I can really say. Did I binge it in 2 days? Damn right I did. But it was definitely hard to get through. Jeffrey Dahmer was born May 21st, 1960, in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, the first of two sons of Joyce and Lionel Hertberg. Now, from an early age, just like we saw on the show, Jeff manifested an interest in dead animals, which started around when he was 4, after he saw his father removing animal bones from beneath the house. Now, just like we saw on the show, this would be just the beginning. For years later, Lionel showed Jeff how to preserve and bleach animal bones, for, you know, he thought he was helping his son's scientific interests. My kid was obsessed with roadkill. I would have some questions, for sure. Now, during this time, Joyce began increasing her daily consumption of Equinol, laxative, and sleeping pills, which obviously made her relationships within the family a whole lot worse. Now, Joyce and Lionel had a miserable marriage, and he was constantly working, and she was suffering from postpartum and other mental disorders, and would often attempt suicide. The couple would always fight, like on a daily, and after they tried for as long as they did, and even went to marriage counseling, in September of 1977, they finally said, "We need a fucking divorce." Now, Lionel thought it would be a good idea to leave the house, so he moved out in early 1978. And in May 1978, Jeff graduated from high school. And not long after, Joyce was awarded custody of Jeff's younger brother, David, and the two of them decided to dip out and live with relatives in Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin, leaving Jeff alone in his home. Now, it's said even around this time, when Jeff reached puberty, that's when he discovered that he was gay. The murder spree. On June 18th, 1978, 3 weeks after Jeff graduated, Jeff picked up a hitchhiker named Stephen Hicks, who was almost 19. Stephen just needed a ride to a rock concert, and Jeff saw this as an opportunity, and so he offered he would take him. If he would just, you know, kind of hang out for a little bit, pregame, I got some beers, I got the house to myself. So, Stephen went. Now, Jeff ended up hitting Stephen with a 10-pound dumbbell twice from behind, before then strangling him to death, which both excited and aroused Jeff, for this would be the first of many kills. Following day, he dismembered the body in his basement and would later scatter the remains throughout his backyard. 6 weeks after his first murder, Jeff's father and fiancé came by to check on him, just to discover that Jeff was actually living alone in the house. And his dad just felt like he needed to find something productive to do with his life, so he suggested that he go to college, and even offered to pay for his schooling. Jeff enrolled at Ohio State University, hoping to major in business, but due to his struggles with alcohol abuse and not attending classes, his overall GPA was .45. Now, Jeff's father already paid for a second term, but Jeff dropped out of school after only 3 months. What a total waste of money. I would be so pissed. Lionel was getting fed up with Jeff's behavior and told him he needs to join the army. In January of 1979, Jeff enlisted into the U.S. Army, where he trained to be a medical specialist in San Antonio, Texas. He would even go on to serve as a combat medic in West Germany in July of 1979. During this time in the Army, two soldiers would later attest to being raped by Jeffrey Dahmer. In March 1981, he was deemed unsuitable due to alcohol abuse and was discharged from the Army. On March 24th, 1981, he went to Miami, Florida. He ended up getting a job at a deli and rented a room in a nearby motel. Now, he would spend majority of his money on alcohol and would later go and get evicted from the motel for not paying. He finally called his father and begged him if he could come home back in Ohio. Jeff lived with his father and stepmother until he was arrested for drunk and disorderly conduct, for which he was fined $60 and was given a suspended 10-day jail sentence. Now, Jeff's father was just completely over his shit at this point. He would come into his room and see that it was just covered in empty bottles. And he just tells Jeff, you know what? You're going to go live with your grandmother in West Allis, Wisconsin, in hopes that he might quit drinking and find a job. By late 1985, Jeff began to visit gay bathhouses frequently, but got frustrated when his partners would move during or talk too much, and this just annoyed him. And for this reason, beginning in June of 1986, he started to drug them with sleeping pills. Once they were passed out, he would rape them. He would go on to do this 12 more times before the owners found out and revoked his membership, where then he started to use hotel rooms to continue practice. On November 20th, 1987, Jeff meets a 25-year-old man at a bar and asks him if he would, you know, want to come hang out back in his hotel room at the Ambassador Hotel in Milwaukee. According to Jeff, he had no intention of killing this man, but to simply just drug him and explore his body. However, when Jeff woke up the next morning, he saw the man lying beneath him and his chest was crushed in and black and blue with bruises. Jeff would go on to state that he had no memory of this. So Jeff went out and bought a large suitcase, which he used to transport the body from the hotel back to his grandma's house, where he left it unopened for a week. After a week, he opens the suitcase and dismembers the body. 2 months later, Jeffrey meets a 14-year-old Native American prostitute and offered him $50 to pose for some nude pictures, where Jeff would later on drug him and strangle him. On March 24th, 1988, Jeffrey meets a 22-year-old man outside a gay bar, once again offered him $50 just to simply hang out, where Jeff would take him back to his grandma's house, drugged him, and strangled him with a leather strap. April 23rd, Jeffrey brought another guy to his house and drugged this victim's coffee. Now here's where it gets interesting. So both he and his intended victim, here's Jeff's grandma, calling him from downstairs like, "Jeff, is that you?" Freaking out, he tried to play it off like he was alone, but grandpa's not no dummy. She knew somebody was down there. So he starts freaking out because he knows his grandma knows he's not alone. So he's like, okay, I can't kill this guy. Instead, he took his unconscious body to the County General Hospital, drops him off, and then just gets the hell out of there. In September of 1988, Jeffrey's grandma was like, all right, I need you to move out because of his habit of drinking. He would bring young men into her house late at night, and there was foul smells coming from the basement and the garage. So Jeffrey moves into a one-bedroom apartment at 808 North 24th Street on September 25th. I shit you not. 2 days later, he was arrested for luring a 13-year-old boy back at his place and got caught. Like, really, dude? Seriously? May 23rd, 1989 was his sentencing day. And guess what? Jeffrey got 5 years probation, 1 year at a work release camp, which he only served 10 months, and was required to register as a sex offender. Like, are you fucking kidding me? That's it? The 1990 to 1991 killings. May 14, 1990. Jeffrey moved into 924 North 25th Street, apartment 213. And I shit you not, people, when I say this. Literally, 1 week within moving in, Jeffrey was on his sixth victim, who was 32-year-old prostitute who Jeff lured him with a promise of $50 for sex. Once again, gave the victim a drink laced with sleeping pills before strangling him. The next day, Jeffrey purchased a Polaroid camera, where he would use this camera to document the dismemberment of his latest victim. Around May 27th, Jeffrey lured another young man to his apartment, but this time he accidentally drugged himself instead of his intended victim. Now, when he woke up the next day, several items of clothing was stolen, including $300 and a watch, which obviously Jeff could not report to the police. Jeffrey would later on meet a 22-year-old Chicago native, and it was said that he only had two sleeping pills left and knew it wouldn't be enough to knock him out, so Jeffrey just slit his throat. 3 weeks later, on September 24th, Jeffrey encountered another 22-year-old with the ruse of paying him to pose for some nude photos. He once again drugged him, but after drugging this victim, Jeffrey didn't feel attracted to him and was afraid he'd wake up and be pissed that obviously he's been drugged. So instead, he strangled him and then dismembered the body. By 1991, many residents of the Oxford apartments had repeatedly complained that the foul smell was coming from Jeffrey's apartment 213, as well as sounds of falling objects and the occasional chainsaw. So the manager calls Jeffrey and he's talking about the complaints. He's like, "Hey man, it's really bad. Everyone is complaining about the smells come from your apartment." And his response was his freezer broke and he had a bunch of meat in there and they just got spoiled. "Oh, I'll get it fixed." He's like, "Okay." Then, on later occasions, neighbors were still complaining that the odor was not, you know, gone. And he was like, "Oh, my tropical fish died." And he said that he'd take care of it. "Oh yeah, I'll get it fixed, don't worry. Tropical fish." On May 26, 1991, Jeffrey met a 14-year-old boy unbeknown to him that he was the younger brother of the boy Jeffrey molested back in 1988. He did the ruse of offering him money in exchange for posing for photos. Now, this victim was initially reluctant, but he needed the money, so he agreed. The victim posed for some photos before Jeff then drugged him and then drilling a hole into his skull. Now, before this poor boy passed out, Jeffrey led him into his bedroom where the victim saw that there was a naked body of another victim Jeffrey killed 3 days earlier. Once his victim was passed out, still technically alive, Jeffrey left to go for a drink and get more beers. In the early hours of May 27th, Jeffrey was coming home after getting beers and seeing his building, and he saw the victim was sitting there naked on the corner of 25th and State, talking to three young women. So he's like, "Oh shit." So Jeff told the women that he was his friend and he tried to leave him back to his apartment. And these ladies are not stupid. You have that gut feeling, you know when something is wrong. And they were not convinced and told Jeff that they already called 911. So two Milwaukee officers come up and Jeff's demeanor just was calm and cool and collected, was relaxed. And told officers that the victim was his 19-year-old boyfriend and he got drunk after the two allegedly got into a fight and he was just, "Oh, he's always drunk. He's just like this, officers." Now keep in mind, this boy is naked and was bleeding. And when the women tried to question officers, like, "What the hell, like, why are you letting him go back in there?" The officer told her to, quote, "butt out, shut the hell up, and to not interfere," end quote. The arrest. On July 22nd, 1991, Jeff approached three men with the offer of $100 just come hang out back at his place and pose for some new photos just to simply keep him company. One of the trio, a 32-year-old, accepted and went back to his apartment. Now, once he got into Jeff's apartment, he immediately could smell the foul odor. and noticed several boxes of hydrochloric acid on the floor. And Jeff's noticing him seeing it, and he's like, "Oh, I just use it to clean bricks." And he's like, "Uh-huh, okay." Now, before getting into Jeff's bedroom, Jeffrey placed a handcuff on one of the man's wrists and told him just to go into him the bedroom. "Okay, sure." Goes into the bedroom. This man saw a 57-gallon drum in the corner of the room and immediately knew that's where the horrendous odor was coming from. Now, at this point, the victim knew some shit was about to go down. I would, too. And Jeff is seeing that he's panicking, and he pulls out a knife and told him just to watch the movie, which, of course, was Exorcist 3. If you have not listened to one of my previous episodes for the Gainesville Ripper, the Scream episode, he also watched the Exorcist 3. What is it with serial killers in Exorcist 3? Jeff placed his head on this man's chest, listened to his heartbeat with the knife pressed against the victim, and told the man he intended on eating his heart. Now, when this victim got his chance, he took it, okay? He punched Jeff in the face and got the hell out of there. At 11:30 p.m., the victim flagged down two Milwaukee police officers, and the officers are seeing the handcuffs, and he's like, "Dude, what happened to you?" And he's telling them, "Some dude tried to kill me. Can you get these handcuffs off?" And the officers tried their key, but it was off-brand handcuffs, so the victim had to end up taking them back to Jeff's apartment. When the officers arrived at 2:13, Jeff invited the trio inside to remain calm and admitted, "Yeah, I handcuffed him." He couldn't explain why, but yeah, I did that. And told police he got to get the key from his bedroom in his bedroom dresser. So police end up following him to his bedroom, and Jeff is trying to, like, divert their attention to, like, the murder hardware store he had in his bedroom, saying, like, "Oh, I'll get the keys, nothing to see here, oh, don't look here, But officers end up going to the drawer before Jeff gets over there. Now, when police opened the drawer, they found several Polaroid pictures, many of which were human bodies in various stages of dismemberment. The officer then showed his partner, saying, "These are for real." And when Jeff saw that he found the pictures, he started fighting with the officers in an effort to resist arrest. Now, the officers overpowered him and called for backup. At this point, one of the officers opened the refrigerator to find a freshly severed head in the bottom shelf. As Jeff was pinned down on the floor, he told officers, quote, "For what I did, I should be dead," end quote. Now, after they did an initial search of the apartment, authorities revealed they found four severed heads in Jeff's kitchen, seven skulls, some painted, some bleached, were found inside a closet, various body parts and bones were scattered everywhere. It was just a real what the fuck to authorities. Jeffrey was arrested, and on July 23rd, 1991, Jeff was brought in for questioning, where he admitted to investigators that he murdered 16 men in Wisconsin since 1987. The trial. On January 30th, 1992, Jeffrey's trial began for the 15 counts of first-degree murder. On February 12th, forensic scientist Park Dietz testified that he did not believe that Jeffrey suffered from any form of mental disease and that there was ample evidence to indicate that his crimes were not impulsive, but planned. Dietz also noted that Jeffrey strongly identified with the villains in The Exorcist 3 and Return of the Jedi, particularly to the level of power these characters held. The trial lasted 2 weeks, and Jeffrey Dahmer was sentenced to life imprisonment plus 70 years. The death penalty was not an option for the judge, since Wisconsin had abolished capital punishment in 1853. Trust me, I was thinking the same thing you were. While in prison, Jeff, of course, found God and became a born-again Christian. Wouldn't matter, though, because on the morning of November 28, 1994, Jeff was found on the floor of the bathrooms of the gym, suffering from extreme head and facial wounds after being bludgeoned with a 20-inch metal bar. Jeffrey was rushed to a nearby hospital, but was pronounced dead an hour later. The inmate who attacked Jeff was thought to be a schizophrenic, and when asked why he did it, he said, "God told me to do it." The Oxford Apartments where Jeffrey murdered 12 of his victims was demolished back in November of 1992. The site is now a vacant lot, with plans to convert it either to a memorial garden, playground, or to reconstruct new housing. But so far, nothing has been officially planned. And that, my friends, is the horrific, disgusting story of Jeffrey Dahmer. Rest in peace to the poor victims of this twisted fucking monster. Oh, God. Poor Evan Peters. If you haven't seen the show, I mean, if you have the stomach to see the show, it's pretty interesting. You can handle that. Thank you guys so much for joining me today. I'm Marissa Blackwood, and don't forget to tune in next week for a new All Things Murder. If you dare. If you're a fan of horror movies or true crime, or perhaps both like myself, don't forget to like and subscribe, and don't forget to check out my TikTok at Sinister Marissa.